Welcome to the Creative Biolabs Science Channel. At Creative Biolabs, we specialize in providing customized viral research services and a vast array of viral antibodies to researchers. Tune into our podcast series for intriguing insights into the world of viruses, and make sure to subscribe to stay updated with our latest episodes.
Good evening, dear friends. Thank you for tuning into the Creative Biolabs podcast series. Welcome back, Professor Williams. In our last session, we discussed the profound impact viruses have on individuals and society. What topic shall we delve into today?
I'm delighted to be back. Today, let's explore the classification of viruses.
Speaking of virus classification, I understand that Linnaeus was the first to propose a system for classifying species and standardized binomial nomenclature. Are viruses classified and named similarly?
Initially, there wasn't a systematic approach to classifying or naming viruses. Before the advancements in biological analysis, many viruses were simply named after the diseases they caused, which were their most distinguishable features, such as the smallpox virus or the chickenpox virus. Some were named after the anatomical sites where they were first isolated, like the rhinovirus from the respiratory tract. Others took their names from the places they were discovered, like the Ebola virus, named after a river in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Zika virus, named after a forest in Uganda. There are even some viruses named after their discoverers, like the Epstein-Barr virus.
Many of these names are still widely used today. Don't viruses need a more standardized classification and naming method?
That's an excellent point. While these common names are still in use, they don't help much in revealing shared characteristics or clarifying genetic relationships among viruses. Even though viruses may not be considered living organisms, they represent a diverse group of infectious entities that we need to categorize properly based on their functions and evolutionary relationships.
It seems that an orderly classification is very important for understanding viruses. So, how do scientists classify viruses?
To establish a scientifically valid classification system, we had to first identify and categorize the actual physical properties of various viruses. With the advent of the electron microscope in the first half of the 20th century, we were able to see individual virus particles for the first time, gaining insights into their sizes and shapes. X-ray crystallography provided further detailed visualization of virus particle structures. Meanwhile, advances in biochemical characterization helped define the composition of viruses, including discoveries about the chemical nature of viral genomes.
Last time we mentioned that viruses, like other organisms, have genomes. What are the similarities and differences between viral genomes and those of other organisms?
Many viruses have DNA genomes that are chemically identical to the DNA of all other life forms. However, unlike other organisms, a significant number of viruses possess RNA genomes instead of DNA, highlighting a fundamental difference between viruses and other forms of life.
Viruses are indeed mysterious and unique. When did we start classifying viruses?
It was in the latter half of the 20th century, as we accumulated more data on viral morphology and composition, that we began developing systematic naming and classification schemes. The International Committee on Taxonomy of Viruses, known as ICTV, was established in 1962, aiming to create a universally recognized classification system. This system adopted the Linnaean structure, including orders, families, genera, and species, and it continues to evolve with new findings and genome sequencing data.
Given that viruses now have their own classification system, what are the criteria used to classify them?
Initially, classification was based mostly on physical characteristics, like whether they have DNA or RNA genomes. DNA viruses, for example, usually replicate in the nucleus of our cells and can sometimes integrate into our genome, potentially causing long-term persistence and even cancer. RNA viruses, on the other hand, replicate in the cytoplasm and have unique mechanisms for gene expression and genome replication, which differ significantly from those of DNA viruses.
You mentioned that viruses with RNA genomes have unique mechanisms for genome replication. Could you explain further?
Certainly. RNA viruses are generally less accurate in replicating their genomes and often undergo mutations at a higher rate than DNA viruses. This high mutation rate poses a challenge for our immune system, as these viruses can change quicker than we can produce new antibodies. The influenza virus is a prime example, necessitating new vaccines each year to keep up with its rapid changes.
I'm curious, besides classifying viruses based on genome type, are there other classification methods?
Yes. After initially categorizing them by genome type, we further classify viruses based on additional physical characteristics like shape, size, and the presence of a viral particle membrane. This helps in distinguishing between different viral families and understanding their unique features and behaviors. Theoretically, DNA and RNA have four possible genome structures: circular double-stranded, circular single-stranded, linear double-stranded, and linear single-stranded. Combining all these features successfully classifies viruses into their unique orders and families.
You just mentioned that theoretically, both DNA and RNA could exhibit four different genome structures, but not all types actually exist in nature, right?
Exactly. While DNA viruses can possess all four genome structures, RNA viruses are known to have only three. To date, no circular double-stranded RNA genomes have been discovered. Consequently, out of the eight theoretical genome types, only seven are utilized in virus classification. Furthermore, single-stranded RNA genomes can be categorized into two functional types: positive sense and negative sense RNA. Positive sense RNA genomes function similarly to mRNA, being directly recognized and translated into viral proteins by ribosomes. On the other hand, negative sense RNA genomes cannot be directly translated and must first be transcribed into a complementary positive strand, which then serves as a template for protein synthesis. This fundamental distinction is a critical factor in the taxonomic classification of RNA viruses, indicating a deep evolutionary divide within this group.
Your breakdown of virus classification is incredibly clear. With technological advances, I understand that nucleic acid sequencing is now a pivotal tool based on traditional virus classification. Could you explain more about how this impacts our understanding of viruses?
Absolutely. The advancements in nucleic acid sequencing over the past two decades have revolutionized virus classification by enabling more precise genetic comparisons. This technology has not only become faster and more reliable, but also more cost-effective. Analogous to how human DNA sequencing services can determine an individual's genetic background and ethnic origins, we can now perform similar detailed analyses on any viral sample. This depth of genetic insight allows for a more accurate evaluation of the evolutionary and biological relationships among viruses and across different viral families. Ultimately, this enhances our understanding of viral evolution, boosts our capacity to quickly identify and classify new viruses, and may lead to the development of novel targeted treatments.
With such rapid and precise technology, are we close to mastering the classification and understanding of all viruses?
Although nucleic acid sequencing offers powerful tools, mastering virus classification and understanding is neither quick nor straightforward. As of the end of 2020, the International Committee on Taxonomy of Viruses has officially recognized only 6,590 virus species. This number represents just a small fraction of the viral diversity present in our biosphere. Fully deciphering the relationships among these viruses will require years of extensive research by the global scientific community.
It seems that understanding viruses is a long and intricate journey. Professor Williams, thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. Join us next week as we continue our exploration of the viral life cycle. Until then, goodbye and stay curious until our next program.